welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show. My name is Lindsay. I invite you to join me where every Tuesday at this time, we talk about things that matter. And what matters this evening is your brain, the inside story of the inside chemistry. To help me move through our brain and get all of our brains organized and settled out just the way they're supposed to be is Dr. Eric Dorninger, our very favorite go-to naturopath from Boulder, Colorado.
Thanks for having me, Lindsay.
I love having you on the show. You are so much fun and amazingly full of information and good, solid information. Dr. Dorninger, or Dr. D, as everybody fondly calls you, you kind of bill yourself out as the last resort doctor. For the people who may not know who you are, can you tell everybody a little bit about you and how you got to be known as the last resort doctor?
You bet. Roots and Branches Integrative Healthcare is a constantly evolving clinic. I remember my good friend, Datis Karazian, and I were talking about some of those patients you didn't help and how frustrating that is when, you know, you hang around with a guy like Dr. Bill Blanchette, who really gives a darn about getting clinical results for people and getting them out of healthcare. If you don't look at a chart from 5 years ago and tell yourself, that was so awful, I had no idea what the hell I was doing with medicine, you're not progressing. And the one thing I love about medicine this time is we really can, through collaborative relationships, through studying a little harder, through peer-reviewed research, through clinical practice, through patient anecdotes that we chase down and then try and reproduce, we can really advance clinical outcomes. I realized a while ago, a very simple mission statement for our clinic. We want to help restore your quality of life, get you back to your life, and get you out of healthcare. I went to see you for pre-med, Bastyr University for a doctor of naturopathic medicine and master science in acupuncture, and we got primary care physician training there. And I realized that's not what we need. We need resolve the patient's healthcare problem training. We need to dig deep, get a very clear, fulminant diagnosis on why someone is sick rather than what they have, and figure out that 2 to 3 page diagnosis so that we can help get them back. You know the deal. Irritable bowel syndrome. Yes, I know I have gas and bloating, doctor. That's why I came here. Why do I have gas and bloating?
Right.
My muscles hurt. Well, you have fibromyalgia. Well, allergy means pain, and myofibrils are the muscle fibers. So you're telling your doctor, my muscles hurt. The doctor's telling you back in Greek, your muscles hurt.
Right.
You say, I'm tired all the time, and they say, you have tired all the time syndrome, chronic fatigue syndrome.
Right.
Where we got to what we got to is I was frustrated with doing green Band-Aids, which is more the naturopathic vulnerability, or the nutritionist, where we kind of slap turmeric as an anti-inflammatory and everything, or the Western approach of drug for symptom, rather than understanding three-dimensionally, how did this physiology get corrupted? How did this crash? And why I wanted to do kind of brain chemistry 101 today, because this fragile organ has some very basic needs. When they are met, it runs very, very well. And when you get the basic needs of the brain met and it's not running well, that's where I come in. On a radio show like this, we really want to move to a medical educator role where we say, look, folks, do these basics first. Make sure that your brain has its primal needs met. And if things don't turn around for you, then we got to dig a little deeper. And we've done some of our older shows. Maybe there's a water damage building, or maybe there's a leptin resistance, or maybe there's cryptopyrals where someone genetically pees out all their B6, or maybe there's something a little more unique and intense genetically for that person, or environmentally for that person, or nutritionally for that person. But what I want to talk about today is, hey, folks, this is a really sophisticated, profound, fragile, delicate, exquisite organ, but it has some pretty basic needs. And when those are met, it can actually process trauma. When those are met, it can handle a breakup. When those are met, it can dust itself off after a bankruptcy and get back in the world. When those are met, it can work through relationships. So we have less divorce, and we have less pain and suffering, and we have better moms and dads that are more present, and we can participate in society a little more. But we do things a little backwards where we don't give the brain its basic needs, and then we can't figure out why our lives are failing.
Right, why you can't participate in this wonderful adventure called life.
Called life, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You did a perfect segue into brain basics.
Yeah.
Let's start out with what are some very basic brain needs.
I'm just going to talk about this from a parent perspective for
Good,
a second.
Great.
If your child's having a hard time, before you go into complicated behavioral dynamics, which I'm all for, I like psychology and appreciate the art and science of psychology, but are they fed? Did they get slept? And do they have a fever? Is there inflammation off of a cold or flu that's driving an uncomfortable, unhappy, dissatisfied brain? Now, 9 times out of 10, what you'll see with kids is they are just so Captain Obvious. They don't have all these complexity layers. They don't have a quad shot Starbucks in their system and, you know, all these other compensatory mechanisms the adults do to hide their and try and patch their brain's basic needs. So feed your child, make sure you put them to bed on time. If they're being really fussy, check their temperature. If they're not feel well. So what do those have to do with your brain? Every single action in your body, from preventing yourself from peeing and pooping your pants to having a complex thought about writing a song or playing guitar, to blinking your eyes, to doing complex athletics, they all require an energy source called ATP or adenosine triphosphate. And that is what gives us life. ATP separates into ADP or adenosine diphosphate. And that separation of two phosphate molecules puts out this energy that allows you to do everything you are experiencing in your world, including feeling love, including giving love, including mowing your lawn. You name it, it requires ATP. And some things and experiences we do require lots of ATP, and others require a basic level of ATP. Brain uses the majority of ATP in your body. So almost all your ATP gets consumed by the brain. And to make ATP, the cell needs two essential ingredients. It needs steady oxygen and it needs steady fuel. And we talk about this day in and day out. Creation of ATP also requires, for example, coenzyme Q10 to run the electron transport. Also needs B vitamins to run, also needs magnesium, zinc. But I can't tell you how frustrating it is when patients get educated on taking, for example, magnesium and B6 and Q10 for energy before they're taught to eat regularly, before they're taught to eat foods that are true slow-burning fuels that keep that brain charged up. So the first thing we talk about with our patients on the creation of ATP, and by the way, as usual, you know, the Chinese and Ayurvedic, the traditional India medicine, we're talking about this for thousands of years ago, and they call ATP qi. The Ayurvedics call it prana.
Ah.
The Andes used to call it life force. Lay English term is energy. So we're all talking about the same thing, but in Western science, it's called ATP. And the biggest problem we see in our clinic straight across the board, and why my practice didn't fold, quite frankly, when I first opened doors, is I knew how to work with hypoglycemia, and that is basically low blood sugar. And in the Lose the Weight You Hate radio show we had, we talked about excess body types versus deficient body types in Chinese medicine. And some people come out thin and lanky, and they're going to be that relative that drives you crazy, that eats whatever they want, they don't put on weight, but they can be a big, hot hypoglycemic mess, low blood sugar mess. And then there's the excessive body types, which they usually go type 2 diabetic, where they get to sugar to the cell problems through insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes. So the name of the game is, how can I get steady fuel to that brain cell to create ATP to make the energy I need? If I had to give one generic recommendation, it'd probably be something like the paleo diet or the autoimmune paleo diet, because inherently with that diet, you're pulling out refined carbohydrates. You're pulling out grains, which have a bigger tendency to dump people's blood sugar. You're also adding in adequate fat and protein. Many Americans don't eat adequate protein. Many Americans don't eat healthy fats. I always have to say, healthy fats make me skinny. Healthy fats make me skinny.
Right.
Because in the 80s, we got beat up by public health with nutrition.
Fats whatsoever.
Be scared of fats, including healthy fats, and eat lots of grains. And that is a hot blood sugar mess, right there.
But we're still doing that. And American Heart Association diet.
And American Heart Association is still doing kind of the Dean Ornish thing. And I tell people, that is one way to get less heart disease. But guess what? More of what Perlmutter and myself and Dr. Blanchette are promoting, which is a high healthy fat, adequate protein, adequate complex carbohydrate diet, is even more heart disease preventative.
Exactly.
And you take that Mediterranean diet, you add more fat, you get more decrease in heart disease. Oh, and then we took the Mediterranean, we added walnut oil, and we added healthy oils, and we just got less and less and less heart disease. So the extreme of that would be giving up carbs altogether and running on ketone. So when you just eat fat and protein, your body will eventually transition to ketones, which is the ketogenic diet. And ketones is actually the preferred fuel for the brain. Now, that's an extreme diet because the second you add carbohydrate, if you have a glass of wine, if you have a margarita, if you have a bowl of quinoa, it'll kick you right out of ketosis.
Right.
And you'll be back to using glucose because glucose is a lot easier to use. But ketones and ketogenic diet, people feel natural high. They feel like they're on top of the world when they can stay in ketones. And this first came out as an anti-epileptic, anti-seizure diet.
Which is the brain connection.
Which is the brain is happy.
To all this.
That's right.
Right.
Exactly. And my theory on why ketogenic works for preventing seizures, it's an electrical conduction issue. And when you have really healthy fats wrapping electrical cords, so to speak, which is those impulses in your brain, you're going to fire those electrical impulses a lot smoother than if you had a frayed extension cord where that electricity is going to get carried in a uniform manner.
Nice insulation.
Yeah. That's right. If someone calls you a fathead, it's quite the compliment if they're talking about healthy fats. You know, if they call you a trans fat head, that's a little bit of an insult. That means, you know, you're just bombing out on Doritos and whatnot. But if someone calls you a fathead and your brain's full of EPA, DHA, and healthy omega-9s from olive oil and omega-3s from pumpkin seed oil and grass-fed beef till slaughter and you're eating all these good healthy fats, your brain's going to thank you. So the first thing we need is steady fuel. And you can do that again through steady glucose with adequate fat, protein, and complex carbohydrates, which is more vegetables,
right?
Low glycemic fruits.
Right.
The grains really have a tendency to dump people. Or you have to use whole grains, which you're not allergic to, that actually act as a carrier, a vehicle for fat and protein.
Makes sense.
So in other words, if someone wants to have a little gluten-free toast, that's okay if it's loaded up with an egg, a slice of avocado, and you're using that. And do an open-faced one. Just have one piece of toast and stack it up with veggies and protein and fat. You know, rather than Deli Zone or something like that, where you're getting a big roll with a couple slices of meat and you're just a carb bomb. And what you'll see is people just need a nap after a lunch like that. And that's because they went into low blood sugar and their brain is upset about it.
Glad you mentioned that, because that's a good sign for somebody that's really easy to pay attention to.
Yes.
After you eat, if you feel like you want to go lay down, then that's what you've done to yourself.
That's right. And I tell people, if you're tired after a meal, number one thing that happened is you had too many carbohydrates on your plate. And we talk about a balanced plate should be like a really nice power outfit. You need your macronutrients, adequate healthy fats, proteins, complex carbohydrates, and that's maybe like a blouse, your pants, and your shoes. Then pouring some dairy-free Caesar dressing loaded with omega-3 anchovies and lemon and garlic. That would be like a pretty sweet belt, you know, maybe some cool bracelet or your power necklace, you know. So you want to look down at your plate and say, wow, I made a nice outfit, which is hard for some people with the way the pace of life works. And I'm a parent and I'm a professional. And sometimes it's like my breakfast is I cut open an avocado, throw some Celtic salt on there, throw in a couple Shelton's turkey sausages that are already pre-cooked, and I'm out the door. You know, maybe I'll have some berries with that if I'm going to go work out. I need a little bit of energy. But you need your convenience meals. And then you need, okay, it's Friday and I'm just chilling. I'm going to cook myself and my boyfriend or my partner or my family or my friends a good meal, and always make more. Cook for an army, save your leftovers.
Exactly.
Freeze them up and do as much rotation as you can to keep home-cooked foods coming your way.
Have you looked into these deliver to your house meals?
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones. And what I would say is look at their menu. A lot of these people post menus online. Their menus can rotate. Evaluate where they're getting their meat. We often refer to Locavore. They're a local farm that raises animals right and will deliver to your doorstep for a good price per pound, grass-fed meat till slaughter. Jake Thompson, again, no royalties. He's just a nice guy who graduated from Bowman College in town in their chef program. He does delivery services. If I was Oprah, I'd probably have Jake deliver all my food. You know, it's like it gets expensive because there is a lot of labor to cooking good foods. But sometimes once every couple of years, if I want to do a gut reboot and do a cleanse and I just don't have time, it's that old thing where you have time but no money, or you're working so hard, you got lots of money but no time. For the people who have a more money and less time, I think those services are great. But you can usually vet them by saying, where do you get your meat? It's a little easier to access organic vegetables. But if they're looking for good farms, that's going to make the big difference.
The buzz question.
You bet. And then I tell people all the time, this is in our Your Brain on Grain conversation, which is
it's on the internet.
On KFCR and on Roots and Branches or drdorninger.com. You can access it under resources. And we talked about there is antigenicity to grains that will crash your brain.
Which means what?
You actually make an antibody to gluten, for example, and that drives a global immune response. So if your body accidentally thinks gluten is an infection, an invader, that's called loss of immune tolerance. It has lost the ability to tolerate gluten as a food at that point, and it thinks it's an infection. It puts an antibody tag on it, and you wind up a global immune response just like you would if you had the flu. Now, it's a little more low-key than that, so it might not show up on the thermometer, but you're going to feel that same fatigue, that same muscle ache as you would if you actually had the flu. So we say there's allergenicity or antigenicity of foods. But then as we talked about that, some people come in and say, hey, my doctors told me my celiac panel was negative. I can eat all gluten I want. No, it's still a refined carbohydrate that's going to make everybody hypoglycemic. And now we have Furisano, who's a very astute researcher out of Harvard, who's got his whole medical wing just for studying zonulin and leaky gut. They just produced a study that shows it doesn't matter if you make antibodies on a celiac panel or not. Every human being that he's evaluating who eats gluten destroys their intestinal lining.
Every single person.
Now, the difference between those who are symptomatic and feeling sick versus those who can seemingly tolerate some New York-style pizza is that they repair quicker. So they still have repair mechanisms. So they break the leaky gut, and they can rebuild it. They break the leaky gut, rebuild it. One day, it's going to stop, and that leaky gut's just going to stay open. You're going to have large molecules come in and drive big immune responses, again, winding up global inflammation that lands on the brain. Put it in lay terms, gut on fire, brain on fire. Anything that triggers gut inflammation is going through your immune system, through cytokines or inflammatory messengers, going to cross the blood-brain barrier and light up your brain. And you're going to feel hungover. And you didn't even have 8 tequila shots and go table dancing.
But what a thing to put your gut through, too. I mean, that's keeping your body in a constant state of stress. Because it's constantly having to go back and repair this leaky gut thing if you eat any kind of gluten, even if you don't think you're gluten intolerant. That's what you're saying, right?
That's right. So why is he getting all this money? They're looking for a zonulin block. They're looking for a drug where we can just say, take this drug and you get to eat whatever you want. And honestly, if it works out, I'm all for it. One of my least favorite jobs is telling people, you can't eat this, you can't eat that.
Yeah.
Then they come back 3 to 6 months later on average and they say, oh, I get why I'm working so hard. My brain is back. And again, I haven't eaten New York deli style pizza in, I don't know, 15 years. I would love to eat a slice of that stuff, but the aftermath isn't worth the experience for me. For most folks, I think, that we work with, really what they want is their energy. They want their brain power. They want their cognitive function. They want the ability to handle stress. They don't want to kick the dog. They don't want to yell at their kids. They want to be peaceful and harmonious in relationships, try and communicate effectively, help progress and forward this world to be a better place. You can't do that when your brain has crashed.
Right. And we also, as we get older, we want to keep our brain.
That's a really good point. On the way out here, NPR had a story on the country with the percentage of oldest citizens right now is Japan. They're doing a lot of education on how to identify someone with dementia because people are wandering the streets. As a community teaching lay people, this is how you recognize dementia, because you might find some elder randomly lost and you might want to be a good Samaritan and get them back to where they're supposed to be going. So the aging brain is very real, and per patient, the most expensive healthcare cost is dementia, Alzheimer's. And what's wild about that is it usually doesn't include medical. It includes housing, bathing,
the caretaking,
helping folks live with dignity without their brain, you know, so they don't have accidents and start smelling funny. And I mean, you know, it's intense when you've had a family member or friend with losing their brain. And I got to go back and say the pizza's not that important.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth? You said that for children, it's food. It's a constant steady state of fuel, sleep, right amount of sleep, and temperature. Is that the same for adults?
Absolutely. It's just so much more dramatic in kids, and they're not in denial, and they're just themselves. Whereas you might try and override that with Advil. You might try and override that with five-hour energy. You might try and override that with another latte. You see adults tantruming all the time from low blood sugar. I like these words like hangry, where we're starting to acknowledge, oh my gosh, this might be a different marital conversation if we were both well-fed.
Or not drunk.
And before we go on to oxygen, we should talk about high carbohydrate foods that dump people. That's the first reason you'd be tired and brain fogged after a meal. Inadequate fat and protein is where you go next. The four things that I have been preaching for years now that dump blood sugar is the refined carbohydrates, and that sugar and grains. That is the bagel, that is the pasta, that is the pastries. That's all sugar. I took this picture at Whole Foods about 3 months ago. I want to post it on our website. And they said, here is the difference between Whole Foods. We don't use preservatives and food colorings. And the Whole Foods shredded wheats had more sugar in it than Safeway's shredded wheats. So I'm like, great, you'll get dementia with less preservatives. And I call those middle aisles, and we've talked about this.
Yeah,
this
you
is
do.
The organic gluten-free diabetes or the organic diabetes. You still need to shop that horseshoe. You still need to input real food. Because once you refine a grain, it is a sugar not attached to fiber. It is going to spike your blood sugar and dump you, leaving you in a hypoglycemic, brain-fogged, grumpy state. Caffeine does a similar thing. Caffeine kicks in cortisol so that you can hide from the hypoglycemia for an extra hour or two. And then you'll notice that like 1-2 in the afternoon is when you dump. Off a bowl of shredded wheat, you'll dump around 10-11 a.m. It won't carry you much further than that. I can't even make it to 10 a.m. on a bowl or something like that. On coffee caffeine, it's going to help you ride a little bit. And then there's things like L-theanine and green tea, which modulate that effect a little bit. And the excess body types, those heavier set folks who have a little stockier build from way back when they were in high school, they can usually handle one cup of caffeine. The skinny minis, and I'm one of them. I tell people, hey, these legs aren't getting on the cover of Men's Fitness. My mom used to say I had Phil Stiller ankles, right? And those people do not handle caffeine well. It turns them into a hot blood sugar mess.
How about decaf?
Decaf is doable. But you'll notice when they're on caffeine, oh my gosh, they are the hummingbird, high as a kite, bubbly, and then boom, they crash. It tricks you, it seduces you, because you're so productive or bubbly or gregarious for 2 to 4 hours, and then you got to pay the piper. You
know, and is that cortisol that's doing that?
That is that cortisol that's helping. So basically, when we go into hypoglycemia, you probably heard of some naturopaths call adrenal fatigue a diagnosis. It is not a diagnosis. You have to say, why are those adrenals fatigued? And one of the reasons adrenals fatigue is if you don't eat to steady your blood sugar, every time you go into hypoglycemia, adrenals release cortisol to cut glycogen into glucose to rescue your hypoglycemic butt, okay?
Yeah.
And that's how we rescue ourselves a little bit with coffee sometimes. But eventually, during that day, you're going to get to a place where the coffee wears off, you crash, and you'll almost feel a low back pain because the adrenal had to work so hard. And the adrenal glands are right at L3. Lumbar 3. So you'll feel just an emptiness in the Chinese medical model, a hollow in that low back. Take a break from the caffeine. And for folks who are listening who want to try that, if you cold turkey caffeine, you can go into a rebound caffeine withdrawal headache. So I tell people, like, let's say hypothetically you have 8 ounces of coffee. Well, then cut it to 4 ounces, then cut it to 2 ounces, then 1 ounce.
Wean yourself off,
and your body will respond quite nicely. The other ones are alcohol. I tell people all day, I like a stiff drink now and again, but we got to be honest, this is fermented refined carbohydrates. You do not make beef vodka.
Right.
You do not make kale gin. You find the most high carbohydrate, like champagne is from the region Champagne, France, where mm-hmm. we use the sweetest grape on the mountain, ferment it. And that's why so many people get headaches off champagne. It's a hypoglycemic dump. And then the final one is Colorado. What else begins with C? Cannabis. So the good old marijuana, I tell people, I don't have any taboo or judgment on weed. I just want to teach people the chemistry of what you're ingesting. And what THC does is it causes a glycogen dump. So it causes your liver to dump stored sugar into the bloodstream. So now you have a sugar high, just like if you shoved a Twinkie in your mouth.
Right.
You over-secrete insulin to meet that sugar response. The cells suck all that glucose out of the bloodstream, and you're also in hypoglycemic attack that we so politely call in the recreational drug world the munchies.
Ah,
so
right.
The munchies are a hypoglycemic attack on your brain. So then you go home and do weird things like put peanut butter on pizza and shove it in your face as quick as you can
right.
to try and restore your blood sugar. That's what's happening. You see the people at Red Rocks, they just start running up to the food court, you know. It's like it takes about an hour or two to wear off, and then they're running up.
And when they come back with M&M's pizza
yeah.
and peanut butter, you know that they're really going for a big buzz.
They're going for a buzz. They're trying to correct. They're just trying to fix their brain state. But we have to keep the blood sugar steady. Therapeutic order for naturopathic medicine is remove obstacle to cure. So we've talked about this. If someone is a moldy building and that's what's making them sick, they're not getting better until they're out of the moldy building.
Exactly.
If someone's celiac and they're eating gluten, they're not getting better until they're off the gluten. The second rule of therapeutic order is reestablish healthy regimen. And that's really what we've been talking about. That's where you got to eat good, clean, steady fuel to run your body, go to bed on time, exercise, create and nurture healthy relationships, break up with people that are toxic. If they're family and they're toxic, set boundaries and work within those confines. The next one is stimulate the vis. That's things like homeopathy, acupuncture, finishing your shower on cold, certain yoga practices.
Stimulate the vis.
Vis, and V-I-S stands for vital force.
Ah.
And then the fourth one is tonify systems. And tonify systems would be where supplementation comes in. Everyone jumps in bed with tonify systems, right?
Yeah, we love popping pills.
You're tired, just give them Q10. And again, we use Q10 all the time, but not before we maybe get them off that gluten or get them out of that moldy building, reestablish healthy regimen, maybe kickstart the body with some acupuncture. Just to finish the list, you then move into correct structural integrity, which is chiropractic, osteopathic manipulation, body work, stuff like that. And why that's a little later, and you can do them all at once, but it comes with a slightly higher risk. No one's going to get hurt by going to bed early.
Yeah. Right?
Once in a while, you're going to get someone who gets hurt by a cervical adjustment. And then after that is drugs and surgery. So a true naturopath who's in with therapeutic order isn't in denial that we need drugs and surgery sometimes. It's just, again, in the conventional model, just like the naturopath jumps right in bed with supplements and tonify systems, the average medical doctor jumps right into drugs or surgery.
Right, exactly.
Right. And you didn't even study their blood sugar,
right.
which has such a massive impact.
Right.
So then you got to do oxygen. An example, oxygen. I'll never forget. I had this eighth grade girl who just went into menarche. She was building very heavy endometrial linings and having raging, gushing 10-day periods. She was a straight-A student. She turned almost overnight into a BC student.
Wow.
And what happened is she was having such heavy bleed, she was going into anemia, and she no longer had enough iron to make hemoglobin to carry oxygen from her lungs to her cells.
Wow.
You go brain dead with anemia. You just aren't getting oxygen to the brain. Emphysema, chronic bronchitis, bad asthma, these are all obstructors of getting oxygen into your bloodstream and to your cells, most importantly, the brain cells. Well, what if you had biotoxin illness and you crashed a very important hormone called vascular endothelial growth factor, or VEGF? This is a hormone that allows blood to release at the capillary level so you can oxygenate tissues. A little athlete called Lance Armstrong knows all about VEGF. When he was doing erythropoietin or EPO as a doping agent, you pump up your VEGF and you hyperperfuse oxygen coming out of your capillaries so his muscle cells could grab more oxygen, make more ATP, and recover quicker than the next guy.
And go forever.
And go forever. And I'm the first to say Lance is a superstar athlete. He's got, you know, nerves of steel and trains like a madman, but you're training against other madmen. And what gave him the advantage was that hyperperfusion at the muscle cell from EPO or erythropoietin. Mm-hmm. So things like VEGF is more of a complex thing. But having your primary care check you for anemia if you're feeling really tired, if you're having things like, you know, you had this teenage girl who was super sharp and smart and getting her work done, and now she can't even put two sentences together, and she's got heavy periods, she might be bleeding out her capacity to carry oxygen to the brain. The last one I want to touch on the oxygen, follow that oxygen. Shoemaker's got a great chapter in Surviving Molds called Follow That Oxygen. It's just like, hey, it honors if you can't get oxygen to the cell for any of those reasons. Congestive heart failure would be another one.
Yes.
You're screwed. You're not going to make energy, and you're going to be super tired. Just look at an uncle who's got emphysema. They can't pull oxygen in, so they can't make energy. So they're going to turn into a grumpy old man. Well, the other one is hypotension, low blood pressure, low blood pressure, low blood pressure. So a lot of our biotoxin patients in particular come in with low BP. And until we get that BP around 110 over 70, 120 over 80, we do not expect them to feel full capacity energy. And that's because your heart is in your chest, your head is in the attic. It's above the chest. You need an anti-gravity machine called tension to deliver that blood from the heart to the head. I'll never forget, I won't mention any names, but there's a famous doctor that one of my patients saw on top of 10 neurologists, on top of 2 psychiatrists, a bunch of naturopaths. I slapped a blood pressure cuff on her. She was severely depressed. She was 80 to 90 over 50.
Wow.
Okay. She hasn't seen oxygen in her brain for years. What we needed to do to get her depression to go away is get oxygen to the brain. Then she could make ATP and the depression cleared.
How'd you do that?
Oh, she was a biotoxin case, honestly. Remember talking about blowing off dusty charts and saying, oh, man, I wish I knew then what I know now. And I hope to, in 5 years, I say the same thing. I say, I hope hanging out with people like Dr. Blanchette, that's a no-brainer. That's going to happen because there are these docs I get to play in the sandbox with who really care about results, results, results. And back then, we just gave her liquor solid extract, which potentiates adrenal hormones, aldosterone, DHEA, and cortisol. But aldosterone in particular, if you can hold that around a little higher, a little longer, you'll increase tension in the vessels.
Wow.
Now, she's codependent on licorice, but people don't care about taking some licorice if their depression totally clears.
Exactly.
So sometimes you need those green Band-Aids, but again, you try everything to remove the obstacle of cure and reestablish healthy regimen, and her pressure was just shot.
I'm glad you brought that up because we do not talk about low blood pressure very
That's
often.
Right.
We're hypersensitive to high blood pressure.
Yes. People will sit there all day long and they'll be like, my doctor told me this is wonderful. I say, it's great because you won't stroke out, but you'll be demented.
Right.
So there is clinical trials in seniors who have stiff pipes, as he calls them, calcified plaque in the arteries. They do better on quantity and quality of life, meaning less dementia and less premature death, when they ride high normal blood pressure because they don't have a flexible aortic artery. They don't have flexible arterioles anymore. So they need a little more pressure in those stiff pipes. Think of it as like a drip system.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Need a little more pressure in that drip system to keep dropping off steady fuel, steady oxygen at the brain. So I have to mention you guys, between you and Bill, that's how I really got educated on sleep apnea is no joke. Snoring is sleep apnea or
is sleep apnea.
And we all learned in conventional and naturopathic medical school that this has to be a 350-pound morbidly obese person to be sleep apneic. No.
Nope.
We have 100-pound soaking wet females who go into sleep apnea. And what happens is you go into hypoxia or low oxygen states. And these people don't sleep well. Because again, two primal needs. Before you need a hug from mom, you need steady oxygen and you need steady glucose or ketones. You need steady fuel, steady oxygen. So when you're lying there in bed, if you had your glass of wine and, I fall asleep so easily, that's the classic perimenopausal female, right? She loves her red wine. One glass just helps put her to sleep. But then she goes into a hypoglycemia and wakes. And they think, I woke because I have to pee. No, you woke because your brain was in a primal panic and felt a hypoglycemic concern, so it woke you up. The other time you'll go into that primal panic waking is if you go apneic. It feels like someone crawled in your bed and put a jiu-jitsu choke on your carotid arteries, right? It feels like you're getting cut off with oxygen in the brain. So you'll wake up and you'll say, oh, I must have had the pee or something. So whenever someone comes in and they're waking 2 to 3 times a night, we're always doing that SNAP study looking for the sleep apnea or sending them to the sleep doc.
So if somebody snores, ask your partner or whoever you're sleeping with, if you snore, that would be trigger number one. If you get what you think is a good night's sleep and you wake up exhausted, that would be another indication. And if you are up and down all night long thinking it's because you have to go to the bathroom, in fact, that may not be so.
That's right. So if you wake like a train wreck, and we talked about this, you guys educated me on this, sleep apnea drives calcified plaque in the heart.
It does.
You correct sleep apnea with a CPAP machine, you arrest that calcified plaque. You arrest that heart disease progression. Some people throw off their CPAP machine. British Medical Journal, Google it, British Medical Journal sleep apnea didgeridoo, and you'll get a 3-minute video on the British Medical Journal study they did where you can correct sleep apnea with the didgeridoo.
What's that?
That is that wow.
Listeners, I wish I could give you a visual on this. that was really good, Dr. D.
That carved out the Australian Aboriginals, the Aboriginals.
The flute kind of thing?
Yeah, the long, yes.
That's that?
Yes. So
you can also cure it with a mouth guard, so don't.
Sometimes mouth guard, yes. The reason the didgeridoo, if patients practice it, is most curative is because you don't have fat throat muscles that are collapsing. You have lazy throat muscles.
Ah.
So everyone goes and works their bis and tris, their hammies, their quads in the gym. Do they work their throat muscles? No.
Talking doesn't do it, huh?
Talking does a little, but now we just text and Facebook. We're not in church or non-denominational choirs. We're not singing. We're not using those chords as much. So we had one guy, he didn't want to do the CPAP because he said it felt like a Darth Vader machine, didn't feel sexy, all this stuff, you know.
He has a point.
And just as importantly, some people just, even if they're compliant, they rip them off.
Yes.
You know, they just unconsciously in their sleep, they rip off their CPAPs. And the machines have improved drastically. Give them credit there too. But after a year and a half, he had depression, adult onset ADD, and severe fatigue. And he had an ashen gray, had a low calcium score, under 400.
But he still had a positive score.
But he still had a positive score. I think he was like a 123. Nicest thank you card I ever got. All he did is play the didgeridoo for 2 weeks, and I get this card. We'll call him John. His wife wrote it. Thank you so much. John has totally cleared his ADD. His depression is completely gone, and he can finally pursue his dreams of being a financial planner.
No kidding.
To this day, he would go on business trips. He actually is fulfilling his professional aspirations because the brain is working.
Gosh.
His basic needs are met so he could go live. And to this day, when he goes on a 3-day trip, by the third day, he was having such apnea again because he was away from his didgeridoo.
Right.
So he bought a mini didge, which is like a little 8-inch didge traveler. And now he'll play in a hotel. You know.
Oh, I love this.
And this guy, you know, just to be clear, like, this is a sweet Christian guy. Getting him turned on to, like, the didgeridoo is kind of a far-out idea.
I would say.
And he finally went for it, and he's giddy. Because he doesn't wake like a train wreck because he wasn't getting choked out every night.
Where do you get these things?
So
Amazon?
I think, you know, our front desk, we can maybe put that up on the website, but there's one company that sells the plastic PVC ones for like $35. It comes with a how to play the didgeridoo. And we've noticed people start arresting their apnea even before they learn how to do the circular breathing. So you're supposed to do and that's how Dizzy Gillespie would hold a note for so long as they did the circular breathing. It's like when you see someone smoke a cigarette and they can exhale while they're inhaling at the same time. That's the skill you're trying to learn. And that's why you can hold a note seemingly forever. That really exercises your throat muscles.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Whenever I play mine, I sleep.
You have one?
I do.
Did you have sleep apnea?
I have grass pollen allergy, and when grass pollen comes around, my mucosal membranes swell a little bit, and that's when I snore.
Uh-huh.
So in the springtime, I try and demonstrate it for patients as much as I can too. That's how I sneak in my little practice. But you know, I used to play trombone, and even if you didn't play a wind instrument, it's pretty easy to get going if you're dedicated to it.
You heard it here first, listeners.
Yeah, and but do the Google the British Medical Journal sleep apnea didgeridoo, and you'll see the whole trial, including them doing an endoscope, looking at the vocal cords when they're playing the didge and when they're not. It's hysterical. It's British narration, and you just love it. But it is, this is a clinical trial where sleep apnea was arrested with playing the didgeridoo.
Wow.
And
wow.
I will say, when people stop playing, the apnea often comes back. So it is like flossing, where it's just a 5-10 minute habit a day. Every other day, you got to keep on. So let's jump into, because I know you wanted to hear about neurotransmitters.
And habits,
these brain messengers. And neurotransmitters, some of the famous ones, dopamine, serotonin, GABA, phenylethylamine.
Well, we hear about dopamine and serotonin all the time.
You do. And all of them are most sensitive, meaning production goes down radically if you are hypoglycemic or hypoxic.
Oh, dear.
So here we go again, where
if you're too much sugar, not enough oxygen.
You can't blow off the hypoglycemia, you can't blow off the apnea, you can't blow off the anemia, the emphysema, all that stuff. So dopamine does, ambition and drive, feelings of self-worth, feelings of hopefulness. You can extrapolate that almost every suicide case is a low dopamine person.
Wow.
The number one connection between all suicide notes, number one, is they all had a feeling of hopelessness.
Wow.
And that simply is because dopamine is not banging in their brain. That's it. Now, second was wild. The second thing on suicide notes was just logistics. Here's how you set the sprinklers. Here's where I left that checkbook. It's a little bit of lightness to a heavy, heavy topic, but they say, I'm hopeless. I don't feel like things are ever going to get better. I need, this sounds more peaceful. And that's where they check out. So it's ability to finish tasks, feelings of self-worth, ambition and drive, feelings of hopefulness, and part of your libido. So you can see how these start cycling on each other.
Mm-hmm.
If you can never finish a task, you're going to start feeling hopeless.
Right.
You're going to start feeling low self-worth.
Right.
Self-esteem is going to start to go down.
Right.
Having these mini accomplishments in our day, even though we don't need to brag about them, you know, it helps us feel value. You know, when you do it to help others, it's even more valuable. You know, hey, I shoveled Mrs. Smith's driveway. You know, she's 75. It's getting a little harder for her. You're going to feel good. So dopamine, serotonin is a specific kind of happiness called enthusiasm. So when people start getting apathetic, they start getting withdrawn, they don't want to participate anymore, that's low serotonin. GABA is anxiety. So GABA does your cool, calm, and collected. And then phenylethylamine is focus and attention. All of these need steady oxygen, steady glucose to get manufactured at the effective levels. All of them need vitamin B6 and some other Bs as cofactors. So you could give someone Xanax for low GABA, Wellbutrin for low dopamine, Prozac for low serotonin, and Ritalin for low phenylethylamine. Or you could say, let's correct their blood sugar. Let's make sure they're not hypoxic for whatever reason. Let's give them a B complex with higher levels of B6. We like the Thorne B complex number 6. I don't get any royalties from them, but they took a straight B complex and augmented the B6. So we do one B complex number 6 after breakfast, but again, only after or during correcting blood sugar and caffeine and over weed and over alcohol and all that stuff we talked about initially. That'll help support all those. The next thing you got to do, folks, is you got to move your body. Walking is phenomenal, but to release growth hormones, to release opioids and these endorphins that everyone's talking about, nothing works better than lactic acid threshold resistance training. I never tell someone to not walk. I will tell a lot of my triathletes, it is impressive what you do, it is cool what you do, but you're overtraining and you need to cross train with resistance training, because you'll see all these gaunt, washed out triathletes versus these studly, you just saw Usain Bolt. Look at the body on that guy.
Right.
That is a sprinter who's getting to lactic acid threshold. He's not running marathons. The way you do that is rest-based training. Pick whatever you want. you could use a bike, for example. Rest-based training is you have to push yourself to the point where you need to rest. You may have heard this as interval training.
Yes.
Interval training would be, hey, I want you to pedal on the bike, Lindsay, for 2 minutes really hard, then coast for 1 minute. Then pedal for 2 minutes really hard, then coast for 1 minute. That is not individualized enough. Rest-based training is you say, hey, Eric, how long should I sprint on this bike? I will say, as long as you spiritually, emotionally, and physically can sprint. And that might be like 2 minutes and 46 seconds.
Right.
Then you should coast, and that's your rest phase. Hey, Eric, when should I start sprinting again? As soon as you are physically able. Certain things like Insanity and CrossFit and these workouts all have this built in, but all you need is a 7 minute workout.
And that's it?
Yeah, one of my patients showed me an app on New York Times. It was like the 7 minute workout. And it's just, okay, ready and go. And it just shows a little guy doing jumping jacks. And it's meant to be for like anyone to do in a parking lot. That's all you need. Now, as you start doing that, you need to do it at least every other day because you'll get a growth hormone dump. You'll increase your testosterone. You'll get your endorphins, your dopamine, your serotonin, your GABA, your phenylethylamine go up. You'll feel high as a kite. You'll be able to crush your work and handle relationships and think clearly and figure out tax problems. I mean, once his brain starts working and 48 hours later, you're going to start losing those hormones again. So you have to get your lactic acid up. Again, lactic acid only happens with burst exercise, this intense exercise. It can be short and sweet, and that binding is then going to get you all those growth hormones. So
the takeaway for our listeners, 7 minutes of jumping jack in the parking lot every other day. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, you could rotate through that. My classmates, Jade and Keone Tita, they wrote The Metabolic Effect. You can Google Jade Tita and learn much more about this rest-based training approach. Metabolic Effect guys, the CrossFit guys are doing it. All I'm asking you to do is show up and don't get injured. Show up and don't get injured. Don't say, hey, I want to lift 300 pounds by the end of the year,
right,
whatever your deal is. Whatever version of this you're going to take on, just keep doing it and don't get injured. That's your two goals, is to keep going to class or keep doing your solo thing and don't get injured. Make sure that you get to a place that's uncomfortable to talk and you're sweating.
And then rest.
Yeah, and then rest. One video that Jade posts, which is hysterical, he does as many pull-ups as he can. As soon as he's done with his pull-ups, he goes into push-ups. And this is a seasoned athlete. So he's doing like 40 pull-ups.
Right.
Then he's doing like 40 push-ups. At the end, he's able to do one pull-up and one push-up. You know how long that YouTube clip is? 7 minutes. So he went
amazing
to a complete muscular failure within 7 minutes and just popped his dopamine. He's high as a kite, lactic acid bound, growth hormones are getting released, opioids are getting released, testosterone is getting released for both male and female.
Yep.
And those anabolic hormones, remember, they protect tissue. So it's not just about penises and erections, it's about holding lean muscle mass. It's about preventing brain degradation and dementia. It's about healing a leaky gut. You need testosterone to heal a leaky gut. So you want to get movement back in your life, and it can be short and sweet. If you're a mom with 3 kids under the age of 5, I will show you, you can sneak in a 3 to 7 minute workout.
So we can do this.
You can do it.
We can do this.
Yes.
Dr. Dornier, what would you like our listeners to take away from this show?
Really take it one step at a time. And maybe we'll finish on some of the habit loops we were talking about before the show. So whether it's a bad addiction or a good addiction, whether it's a bad habit or a good habit, we don't talk good and bad in my clinic. We talk about things that are nourishing and things that are depleting. So whether it's a nourishing or a depleting habit, you have a cue, a routine, and a reward you get for almost everything you do in your life. Talking to you about my buddy who, his cue is 4 p.m. That means I'm supposed to go to happy hour. That's
right.
His routine. And the endorphins that beer give him are his reward. So don't change the cue. Don't change the reward. He should still look for his break in his workday at 4 p.m. He should still look for endorphins. But he needs to change that routine to going for a workout. And he just started doing this. He just started doing surf lessons. He's out in Newport, California at 4 p.m. instead of going to the bar. He's dropped 10 pounds. His knee pain inflamed. Yeah, literally, I was texting him on the way here. So proud of him. Inspiring me because, again, this is a guy who's drank way too much since our college years. He's 44 now. He's weathered from the booze. And he's just taken his life back by simply changing the routine. The cue's the same. He needs a break at 4 p.m.
Right.
He needs a boost in endorphins.
Right. So instead of walking to this playpen, which has
to the bar, he's walking
to
the beach.
He goes to that one.
And he's an athlete. This guy played almost pro volleyball. He's choosing to take a different stance. So many changes. Start small, but stay consistent and build, and you will get exponential growth on restoring your health. And if you're doing those and it's not happening, then come and see us.
Dr. D, I love having you on. I had so many aha moments. I have a whole page of notes I took. I'm so looking forward to our next show.
Well, I owe you a few.